C2SP. Number 9B.
What is the seventh day? What is the 7,000-year period? And as we have been seeing, the 7,000-year period, or let's first take, we have seen that the 6,000-year period really revealed itself, manifested itself, that really it is the 1,000-year period of science, where the system of science, the structure of the system of ideas is being revealed as it was prophesied in the Book of Revelation, and it has been fulfilled, so that we can say then the 7,000 year will also be fulfilled, which means that the next step that we have to take is to get away from the tonality of ideas into the tonality of the capitalized terms, because that is in the line of spiritual evolution. And we have dealt with that question more in detail, at the end of the chapter on Apocalypse, when we did the summer school on the chapter on Apocalypse. And since then, I have always brought it out more and more, and I have also written a little pamphlet on the 1,000-year periods in regard to the change of idea of reality and symbolism, and you will get that, I hope so, in the middle of or at the end of the year. It is a small pamphlet that shows the development of the idea, and we can really, through science, prophesy, but it's no more really a prophecy, but extrapolate the development of the idea. That it will be a 1,000-year period where we get into the tonality of the capitalized terms, where we are no more so much thinking in terms of individual ideas, but in the capitalized terms. Furthermore, that we are much more thinking in categories of the capitalized terms, and no more in the developing sequence of ideas running through the order of the days of creation, but that something quite higher will precipitate itself in our consciousness, and so little by little we will be introduced that the new world, that spiritual world which is of the 7,000-year period, will be conscious of just the capitalized term, the order of the capitalized term, think in the categories of the capitalized term, think in the laws of the relationship of the capitalized terms, so that all what is here as specific ideas is falling away and is giving room just to the simplicity of the definition of God. That we can see because we have touched since many years already the fringe of that development. And they have seen that this development is that which urges itself upon us without asking for it. That it is a Christ impulsion that is already at work, because those 1,000-year periods, they don't appear after New Year's Eve in the year 1999, and then suddenly something starts with the new year of the year 2000. It is it flows into the 1,000-year period, flow into each other, and so the first signs already show themselves before the 1,000-year period breaks in. So this is, I think, what she meant here, and how we can put it into practical terms, where she says that it is the prerogative of the ever-present divine mind. We work with the divine mind and not with beliefs. And of thought which is in rapport with this mind. That we can know the past, the present, and the future. You see, the past, the present, that means that we can look backward and see what is the development in the past, and therefore extrapolate into the future. That's what every science can do to some extent. So acquaintance with the science of being, enables us to commune more largely with the divine mind, therefore again repeating it, to foresee and foretell events which concern the universal welfare, to be divine inspired, yea, to reach the range of fatalist mind. You know, text interpretation must always take into consideration also what is not said. Not only interpret what is said, but what is not said. And here we have a very good example for that, because the moment we read there on line 15, communing largely with the divine mind, to foresee and to foretell events, the human mind at once says, oh, we can foretell if there is an atomic war. We can foretell when this and this and that happens. We can foretell when communism falls. We can foretell when this and this happened. Events, she speaks of events, foretell events. And the human mind makes a complete break and goes right away from the divine mind that can foretell events. The divine mind can only foretell events that are in the realm of the divine mind. It has no communication with the realm of mortal mind and of human belief. So we do not foretell when there will be a war, what kind of a war that will be, and so on. These are not the events that are meant here. Namely, there are only events which, now it is qualified here, which concerns the universal welfare, not the universal catastrophes. This is divine mind reading, so that we can see the development of the idea. That's of universal welfare and not evil fare. Yes, that's my rendering. So to be divinely inspired, yet to reach the range of fatalist mind, to be, as the 7,000 year period will show, that we are actually more and more conscious only of the signs of mind, therefore only going out from mind, and mind can only see its own ideas, can never see a material universe, a universe of evil. That is what Mrs. Eddy hoped would be her revelation when she started out, and when she said, God's eye are too pure to behold evil, therefore in God's eye you cannot see sin, sickness, nor death. It's unknown. This is a very high level that we can only arrive at through the consciousness of the 7,000 year period, when that is cultured. Yes, so these two paragraphs have a common denominator, all telling about the future, the two different ways of telling the future, either from the true future, which is the scientific future, or the spiritualistic future, fortune teller. We come to the next subtone, truth. And here we see that truth is built up again through seven subtones. So we just have to find the ways and means to keep in mind in our mentality the subtone of truth, which I epitomized like this, that the science of mind enables us to recognize the error which needs to be destroyed. So the science of mind is then the savior. So this is the great point now, that the science of mind, which knows no error, can uncover error. so that the science of mind is able to recognize the error which needs to be destroyed. So up to this point, we always said, well, the divine mind can only see its own ideas, only the good. And now, suddenly, the next subject here would have to show, well, do we then leave error alone? Do we then just have close our eyes to the situation, to the erroneous situation? Do we close our eyes to the spiritualistic sense of consciousness? And that would not be a savior, because we must be freed from spiritualism and therefore from mortal mind reading. We should be freed from the error that is the cause of a problem. And therefore we suddenly come to a completely different question that has to be resolved. In one way we see there is no bridging the gulf between divine mind reading and mortal mind reading, and yet we say, well, that is no savior if the plane of mortal mind existence is not destroyed, is not annulled, is not annihilated, is not wiped away, does not disappear, or it would not be a savior. So here we will have to find really the answer for that. You see, up to this point I was very sharp in distinguishing between those two levels, that they have nothing to do with each other, and now we have to say, is that so? Isn't there somehow a method how the divine can reach the erroneous and can destroy the erroneous? Only then really is the divine mind the mind of Christ, which is saving. This is the problem that is discussed here. So we start out, she doesn't answer that just in a few sentences, but builds it up through the sub-subtone of mind. Through the unlimited divine mind, we can discern man's nature and being. That's first the starting point. So that we first can see the true nature of man's being before we can uncover what is the wrong nature of being and then destroy it. To understand that mind is infinite, not bound by corporeality, not dependent upon the ear and eye for sound or sight, nor upon muscles and bones for locomotion, is a step towards the mind science by which we discern man's nature and existence. So this is a tone of truth to discern man's nature and existence, the sixth day of man. And this, she says, we can only do if we make real advance in our mind science. Only from mind we can see what man is. So this true conception of being destroys the belief of spiritualism. So you come at once to a very interesting point, that for the first time she accentuates that the true conception naturally destroys the belief, the wrong belief, the belief of spiritualism at its very inception. At its very inception. Can you see now she begins to build a bridge, so to say. So she said there is no bridge, she begins to build a bridge. We make call it that way. But not from truth to error, but begins to build a bridge that she says, look here, a man cannot be at the same times in two different mazes of consciousness, that she has said before. So he cannot at the same time know the truth and know the error. He cannot. Therefore, the solution is that in the measure as man sees himself as the manifestation of mind, he can almost see himself as the manifestation of belief, so that the true concept of being destroys the belief of spiritualism or the wrong mental attitude at its very inception. That's interesting to see. Not afterward, but just to say, if a man cannot know truth and error at the same time, with the same consciousness, then we must see that there is a divine consciousness and a human consciousness. If we begin with the true conception of being, that's the beginning of the sentence, with the true conception of being, that sorts out or destroys or annihilates or sweeps away that I begin with mortal mind. I cannot at the same time begin with divine mind and with mortal mind. This is not possible. So that very right standpoint from which we go out is at the same time a destruction of the wrong standpoint at its very inception, for without the concession of material personalities called spirits, spiritualism has no basis upon which to build. So this is the solution between those two. Why those two have some kind of a relationship. Namely, that relationship that if I start with the divine mind, I cannot start with the human mind or the mortal mind. That's the relationship. That it excludes each other. And so there is no need, so to say, to have a divine mind and then all the phenomena of mortal mind and then say, how do they communicate? That's not really the point. It shows that beginning with the divine mind excludes the possibility of going out at the same time with the human mind, with mortal mind. And this leads us really into the 7,000 year period. This is it. So, that's the very first point we said, that through the unlimited divine mind we can discern man's nature being, which we can add excludes that we begin with mortal mind. Then we come to the subtone of spirit. If we have thoroughly learned and properly digested that science of mind, spirit enables us to calculate the truth accurately. Again, we have a purely positive statement. Here we get it. All we correctly know of spirit comes from God. That's what we have seen in mind, that when we start with mind science, everything comes from mind science, and that can only see man's true nature, true conception of being. So all we correctly know of spirit comes from God, the divine principle, and is learned through Christ and Christian science. So as we establish that through mind, we establish, therefore, the true idea. Then comes in spirit, it goes on to the tone of spirit, if the science has been thoroughly learned and properly digested, it's still a tone of mind in it, we can know the truth more accurately than the astronomer can read the stars or calculate an eclipse. So indicated indirectly, without saying it in terms, she says, if we go out from mind, we learn the ideas of mind, we learn to reason from mind, and that helps us to really calculate properly. This is a term for spirit, the calculus of spirit. We begin to blend these ideas, to calculate with these ideas, to bring them into relationship, but always from the point of view of mind. So we get the calculus of spirit, the rhythm of spirit. Then So, this divine mind reading enlightens spiritual understanding with intuitions of soul. So that calculus of spirit now becomes the spiritual understanding. She says, this mind reading is the very opposite of clairvoyance, had nothing to do. So clairvoyance is the opposite of mind reading. It means naturally the divine mind reading is the illumination of the spiritual understanding, which demonstrates the capacity of soul, not of material sense. So we get to the capacity of soul. Now we fill really soul with all the calculus of ideas. This soul sense comes to the human mind when the latter yields to the divine mind. Again, we see they do not really communicate. When the human mind yields, then only one is left over, namely the soul sense. So it is like light that never understands darkness, that light that never mingles with darkness, and yet it has the ability to sweep away darkness. Not by changing the light, light remains light, the identity of light remains, is changeless, but it excludes another standpoint. It excludes the standpoint of physical sense, and therefore in this way wipes out the false testimony of the physical senses. We go further to principle. These intuitions reveal whatever constitutes harmony and the error which has to be destroyed. Our principle is the principle of all ideas, and she said, because we learn it through Christ and Christian Science, that principle as the Christ begins to illumine spiritual understanding in soul with what? With the exact ideas that are necessary for a solution. That's principle. So we get here a tone of principle. Such intuitions reveal whatever constitutes and perpetuates harmony. So again she says, divine mind reading can only read the good, can only read that which is good for the future and for humanity and for universal harmony. Enabling one to do good but not evil. So it shows that that consciousness can not do evil because it's built on a basis that does not know evil. So you will reach the perfect science of healing, how comes healing in, when you are able to read the human mind after this manner and discern the error you would destroy. The Samaritan woman said, come see a man who told me all things that I did. Is not this the Christ? This is an important point here, because now it shows that the Christ can read all what I ever did. It can read the error that needs to be destroyed. But how? And that's always the big point. First, we always see that the statements are that the divine mind cannot read evil, that the divine mind can have no consciousness of error, that the divine mind has no bridge over to error, and yet there should be healing between those healing activity going on, really the truth destroying error. But how? And she said, you will reach the perfect science of healing when you are able to read the human mind after this manner and discern the error you would destroy. This is quite a little enigma, but which solves itself if we know more about the Christian Science and the text. It means this. We have a problem. It shows itself forth as an error. This error shows itself forth on the plane of human belief, not on the plane of divine mind. The divine mind does not know it. So it is on the level of human belief. So only on the level of human belief that error is shows itself to consciousness. She says, but if you go to this manner of method, that you go to mind and fill your thoughts with mind and see what mind knows. Mind only knows ideas and nothing but ideas. And you begin to calculate ideas. That's the tone of spirit. Then you will be illumined. Then it's illumination of spiritual understanding. These were the first three subtones. And so your spiritual understanding is illumined. That's the light that comes to the darkness. And the more that light comes to the darkness, the more that darkness disappears. The error is handled. So it is not that the light mingles with darkness, that truth mingles with error, but that it wipes it out, that it makes it superfluous, that it just doesn't come anymore into our realm of consciousness. And so in this manner, that the error that has to be wiped out through the law of opposites is discerned. So it's actually the law of opposites that is not mentioned here specifically, but that is mentioned in the other writings of Mrs. Eddy, that really it is through the law of opposites that the opposite stands out in consciousness. And this is the way that treatment is scientific. And I will talk about it this afternoon more specifically when we have more time to go into it. But you can see that there is a savior at work when we go out from the science of mind, that is a savior for error, though mind never knows error. And this is on the fact that we will discuss this afternoon, on the fact of the law of opposites. Namely, the moment I see that 2 and 2 is 4, I see at the same time that everything that is not equal 4, or that the calculation of 2 and 2, which is not equal 4, is a mistake, is an error. So the 2 and 2 equal 5 is uncovered specifically. Though 2 and 2 is always 4 and does not know the 5, the 2 and 2 never knows the 5, or the 6 or the 7. It never knows it, but through its very fact that it is only 4, says, therefore it cannot be something else. And that's the error that has to be destroyed. All right, we'll take up that subject again this afternoon.